Accession number 24192, reel 16.
Mr. Taylor, reel 16. We're talking about the period. You were still at Iselohn. After the amalgamation with, and you were now the 1st Battalion East Anglia Regiment. What anything happened then? How much longer were you there for? Did anything happen while you were?
We were there. This is August. We were there until beginning of January. Beginning of January 60. Not a great deal. I think then we knew we were going to Berlin, back to Berlin. So everything was sort of then geared toward Berlin. We were going to be up there as an APC battalion. So that's everything then taken up to sort of for the move.
Now, what's an APC battalion?
Each company has allocated APCs, so when you move, out.
Armoured personnel
carriers.
And which ones did you have?
Can't remember what they're called now. Used to carry, you had your commander and your driver, I think. Used to carry 12, something like that. 12 people. I can remember.
So you need a fair number of these.
Oh yeah.
Was it the whole battalion that had APCs, or just the companies?
The rifle companies. The other companies had some, but not the amount that the. Because mainly like the signals and that sort of thing used to have their stuff on mounted on trucks anyway.
So this was your full mechanisation in a way.
That's the start of the
Now where were you put in Berlin? You went there in January 60.
We were in Montgomery Barracks in Kladow. Which was just down the road from Kladow Airport.
How do you spell Kladow?
Kladow.
And what was the barracks? Usual German
barracks. The only difference was with the German barracks, with the Montgomery barracks, was that you were sitting on the German East German border. So in fact, one of the barrack blocks, we couldn't use because it was in the Eastern sector, and they built a fence around to take in that block. And when we were on parade, the East German police, the Vopos, would stand at the fence watching us on parade. And you could walk down, you could see their machine gun posts from where we were, and where we were standing. And so that block was never used at all. And we started out exercising, of course, back again into the Grunewald Forest, which is the main training area.
What was the Grunewald Forest like? We've not really mentioned that so much.
Senelager's
not there, is it?
No. Senelager's down the south. I can't remember how big it is, but it's one of those places where you'd been. If you did exercise over there sort of for 4 or 5 times, different exercises, you could say you didn't need a map reference. You could say, you know, that crossroads where something so and so happened. Well, that's where we're going, because you could do it like back of your hand after you've been there 4 or 5 times.
It's pretty small.
It was reasonably small, although you thought at the time it wasn't. They had a competition up there, battalion competition. Between between the three battalions that were up there. So you had three platoons from the Royal the East Anglians. I think the KOSB were there at the time, and the Light Infantry. So you had three platoons from each doing this competition. The competition consisted of you had all your kit, your camouflage kit, you did a march. Well, you went to the HQ Berlin, HQ District Berlin, where you were inspected by an officer from them to make sure you had all the kit, your compasses, your all the kit that you required for the exercise. You then did, I think, about 14 miles march to an area where you did a platoon attack, which was all carried out and umpired by different units. We did a platoon attack. We then went on to the River Havel, the Havel Lake.
This is in Grunewald.
This is all around the Grunewald area, yeah. Then went across to the Havel Lake. We picked up boats and rowed across the Havel Lake. And that was quite cold. And the wind whipping up, and it was quite rough. We got across. You then went on to a night hide. That was night time. Then went on to a night hide where you were still being umpired by different people, met up with different people. That'll be fed, who your points gathered on being the feeding of the platoon, sighting the platoon, and sentries, posted sentries, digging in if necessary. You always had one guy with a truck with your kit on, the kit that you required, like rations and that sort of thing. And he would go around the area for your night sight, night area, with a counter, as you would be for after an atomic situation, a Geiger counter. That was all judged by umpires. Following morning, you would then start out and do ambush, create an ambush. And this was the second day. Find an ambush, clear the ambush, move on another 6-7 miles. This is for the and another night. This is a defensive position. You had to dig a defensive position. This was another thing that was all judged, of course, by different units. You had to send out a patrol to certain areas, bring back information. This was all judged again. The defensive position was judged. How do you arc the fire planned and all that sort of thing. The following morning you went and
for the third day.
This was the third day. Went out another march. I think we did 15 miles, and we had to clear a village. They had a police village there set up, which was a normal thing, but it was there, and we had to clear that. But when we got there, there was somebody already in there that was one of the other units, so we caught him up. They'd started before us, but we'd caught them up, so we had to sit out and wait for them to finish before we could start. So we were going fairly well. And anyway, we cleared the village, and that was sort of the last point. Then we had a walk, I think. We had them march back to camp. About 20 miles, I think. I think it was about 20 miles. And on the way back, we were halfway back when the adjutant came round, driving up and caught us up and said that we'd won it. And as it happened, we came first, B Company came first, A Company came second, and C Company came third. And what used to happen was that the platoon would go up and pick up the trophy at the headquarters. But because the battalion had won first, second, and third, the GOC came down and presented the cup on the square to us from the. So that was them.
That was a hell of a
knackered, shattered that night. Of course, when we got back, and that was time enough to go to the mess and celebrate. So we all met up in the mess, all of two sergeants who had been on the competition. We all met up in the mess and had a good night. And because it was the following morning after the competition when the TOC came down and presented us with the cup. I always had a photograph, but I can't remember, I can't recall what happened to it. Photograph of being sent with the cup. That was a hell of a setup that was. And then you still had your normal exercises. And then in I think it was May of 1961.
So you've been there about in Berlin about a year and a half.
Just over a year and a half then. And I was told that I was going to Sandhurst as an instructor. We did a 6-week course initially on drill, weapon training, tactics. Before you actually take it on as an instructor, if you didn't make it, then you didn't stay. So I made it, and I finished up at Sandhurst for 3 years.
So 61 to 64.
Yeah.
Now tell me about what were you doing as an instructor? What exactly were you training them in at Sandhurst?
We did everything. You did the drill. That's rifle drill, sword drill, normal foot drill. You did your normal weapon training on rifle, LMG, Sterling, and you did your tactics, section training, platoon training, and picking out the people for the leaders and this sort of thing, and teaching them how to do it. This was sort of the... This went on. Well, they were there for 2 years, I think. Didn't take 2 years, I think. They were, how they worked it, what I can remember. And we had, who was there at the time? Prince Michael. Prince Michael was there. We had a couple of the Saudis, the Saudi sheikhs
were there. These were going to be officers.
Yeah.
You know, many of them.
These were going to be officers, yeah.
Many of them, most of them. Now, how did they compare, in your view, with the ordinary recruits that you had? In other words, were they actually better or more intelligent or better soldiers?
I think they left a lot of common sense behind when they left school or wherever they came from. But
were they good?
In the main they were quite good. You know, there were some that said that you know, if you're going to take a platoon, you're going to lose them, you know, or you're going to command a tank, you know, you lose your way, sort of thing. This is what I used to tell them anyway. And,
Were they noticeably better than the ordinary recruits you'd had, though?
Yeah, I think they took it in. They could take it, learn better. They could take it in.
They were brighter.
Yeah, brighter than they. Yeah, you had one or two who weren't, in my view. So you always got the odd one or two. You did your duties and... roughly the same. If you're on duty that day, they get defaulted exactly the same as the recruits. And you had to, or if they made a blue on sword drill or something, you had to take them on sword drill as an extra parade, or rifle drill, an extra parade, something like that. And well, that's where I met up with Creasy again. He came down as chief instructor. And I enjoyed it. We had a new house on the camp, on the academy itself. So that was quite good. A quarter. That's not too far away from home. The mess was good. I enjoyed it. The latter part, the last year I was there, I was made staff sergeant.
And what did that entail?
It meant that I then became a senior, so I went. I went running the whole company stores, the whole setup for everything, for exercises and issuing all the gear and
was that like company quartermaster sergeant?
Yeah.
Was there a new name for it? Or
they call you colour sergeant down there? It's all staff. Even the sergeant was called staff anyway. And you had all the clothing to issue. Had all the clothing to take in off them when they finished. The blues, the number one dress, had to take that off them. And when they left, issue all the stuff for the exercises and make sure it came back in correctly and all this sort of thing. It was quite a big... Big job, really. Had a lot of stuff. We went did an exercise, went into Germany, did an exercise in Germany, roughly the same as we'd done before. All the exercises are roughly the same, with the odd, probably odd exception. We went to Libya, did an exercise in Libya, from there. And
do you think there was any benefit in going overseas for these exercises that couldn't have been done in Britain?
I think it could have been. I think it's just to get them, kind of a change of scenery. The training area itself, outside the academy, wasn't that big. And once you'd been on it a couple of times, and there was no sort of surprise to it, to the area. You know, you knew exactly where. We did. We used to do it, go out to a little bit further out. I can't remember it, the life of me, what it's called now. A bit further out to an area, but that was only a small area actually. You could only do sort of section stuff on it, as opposed to turns and this sort of thing. Other than that, it was sort of the general stuff, drill, set up.
So that was it till 64?
Yeah, so 64.
What happened then?
I went to join the battalion in Aden.
Now, what was the were they still the first East Anglia? The first battalion East. Or had they changed?
No, we changed then. Just before I left the academy, we changed to One Royal Anglian.
First Battalion Royal Anglian.
Royal Anglian, yeah.
How did you feel about that?
Changed it to One Royal Anglian.
Did it make a difference?
It sounded a bit better, actually. With the Royal back on again. Yeah, sounded better. So I joined a battalion, and in Aden I went to...
You've been away 4 years. What change? Any changes, or was it still the same?
There were one or two different people there, I can remember.
Overall spirit of the battalion and nature of the battalion the same?
I think it was then, because they were doing something at setting up and doing something which they'd been trained to do, rather than sort of doing an exercise.
Now, what was the situation in Aden? There was some trouble out there.
There was trouble at the time, yeah. I went initially to headquarters company when I first got there, and then I was on the we were on the range one day, and Della, I met up with Della again. He was A Company.
Bill Della,
A Company commander. He came down and he told Creasy was the CO. Of course, we met up with him again. Was the CO at the time, and Della told Creasy that he wanted me to go up to his company, which was way up country, up just on the Yemen border, as a platoon commander.
Were you company sergeant major?
No, I was still CQMS, but he wanted me to go up as a platoon commander, because one of the platoon commanders had gone away on a course or something.
Now that would normally be an officer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I went up to join A Company, and as platoon commander, 5 platoon I think, if I remember rightly, no, 3 platoon. And what we did up there was every other night we'd do a patrol, a fighting patrol, or an ambush patrol, up towards the Yemen border.
Hang on, before we go, tell me what difference did it make being a platoon commander? I mean, was it very different from being a platoon sergeant? You know,
slightly different. You had a little bit more responsibility. I mean, especially in that situation, you took the patrol out. You were responsible for the patrol and what happened, whether you set the ambush or laying the ambush.
Let's talk about the patrols, and I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. How would you prepare and take out a patrol?
You'd get your briefing around about mid-afternoon from the company commander as to where you're going and what the object was of the exercise, or the object of the patrol, rather. And you then get the platoon together and tell them who was going to be on that patrol that night. You didn't take everybody out.
Now, was that a volunteer thing, or was it you?
No, you took out the people you thought was best for that particular particular patrol, you then brief them on what they've got to do and where we're going and who was going to do what, issue the ammunition, make sure everything was in working order, protect the rifles, the LMGs. And
what weapons would you take?
You know, what rifles, rifles and the LMG. That's about all, really.
Not hand grenades.
Not hand grenades, no. So, and we used to leave, I think, probably about last light, which in most cases there was about just after six. And we'd go out to the point where we'd lay out for an ambush, or to the point where we sort of patrol the ground and to make sure there's anything around and any enemy or anything.
How would you lay an ambush? What would you look for in a good ambush site? And how would you actually lay it?
Well, you'd want to know roughly where the enemy, what sort of, it's got to be on a track, really. You could have an open field or anything like this. You had to know which track they were working on or walking on regularly through it. What sort of area was behind it? So if you situated trees and bushes and that sort of thing, because you needed an area behind where people could go and have a quick meal and this sort of thing. You'd then find out the killing area where the main firepower was going to be. You'd then set out your cut off people about 20 metres, two of them 20 metres to your left, two more 20 metres to your right.
What were they? What do you mean cut off people?
Well, depending on which way they came, the enemy come, they could then say they're on their way. If some then got past you, the others could cut them off further up the track. So you had your main firepower. You put in your flares. You could either put a trip wire on, or you could detonate them by hand. And then you'd sit and wait. Probably, I think, as I said, about six by the time you sort of set up and got the people out and checked out everybody was in position and everything was ready. Probably take about an hour, I should think, if I remember rightly. And so we sort of more or less sat in there about 4 or 5 hours in that position. I mean, if necessary, you would sit there for couple of days, depending on what was required at that time. If they wanted to sort of get hold of somebody, catch somebody and get some information and this sort of thing. But we used to do it by about four or five hours of the night.
So were they ever triggered, the ambushes? I mean, in other words, did
they?
No. No one ever came through?
No.
Now, what about, so after that you do that for 4 or 5 hours, but what about if it was, you know, you weren't laying ambush but you were carrying on patrolling? What would you do then? What was your method of patrolling? What formation would you adopt as you went up the tracks?
A lot would depend on what sort of country you're going across. You're going sort of through trees, you'd keep fairly tight together in single file, with the guys behind keeping a watch from behind and everybody sort of looking left and right. But you're still keeping fairly tight control. If you got out in the open ground, then you would probably a V formation or a diamond formation, something like that. So everybody had an all round picture of the area, an all round sort of. So if anything happened on the right, you all have people looking that way, so they could determine what was to happen at that particular point. And sometimes you could have them in a single extended line going forward.
And did you ever meet anyone there, or was it just a matter of routine?
We shot at somebody one night, never got anything back from it, so we don't quite know what happened, but we saw a guy with a light around the valley, with a torch or something, so we fired a few shots at him, and of course in those times you had to bring the empty cases back to account for the shots he's fired, that's the thing. But we didn't get any feedback on that one, so I don't know exactly what happened. But we certainly, I think he was hit anyway. And that's what used to go on every other night.
And how long would you stay out in all?
Probably about 7 or 8 hours.
And what about debriefing? Would there be a proper debrief?
Yeah, you'd have the duty officer in the duty officer at the camp, or the company commander would be up waiting for you to come in. Then you would then go and report to him and debrief and do the necessary and make sure the guys were... Well, you had to make sure everybody unloaded the rifles and that sort of thing before we came into camp, of course, but then you'd go and do your debrief and then go and make sure that everybody was... had sorted out and put the weapons away and sort of settled in for the night. Well, it was nearly daylight anyway, so... And then you sleep through till probably mid-morning, something like that. And then start cleaning up and sorting out for the next night.
Now, what about... did the other patrols have a fairly quiet time as well?
It was
a fairly quiet area, this Yemen area, about the border.
Yeah, it was.
Now, can I ask you, we've talked about Della when he was just a young lad, but how was he now he was a major? How had he developed as an officer, or had he developed as an officer? What was he like as a company commander?
He seemed to me, so the time that I spent with him, he seemed quite well, quite good, really. I suppose he must have thought something of me to ask for me to go as a platoon commander, but having known me for some time.
Had he changed at all?
No. He's still the same. He's still the same now, actually. And it's just his way. You know, you tend to sort of ignore him sometimes when he sort of get in his bullish mood. You just ignore him and say he'll go away, sort of thing. But he hadn't changed any.
Now, what else was happening? You were up with your... Well, A Company was up on the Yemen border. How long did you stay out there?
I was up there probably, I think, just over a month. And we had a National Guard unit at the Arab National Guard. What they used to call themselves, the Federal... Federal something? FNA. Federal National Army. Federal National Army, they call themselves. And they were over the Jebel, over the hill. But at the same time, we used to get fired on, mortared, sort of around about 5 o'clock every night. I don't know where they knew exactly where we were, because nothing ever dropped on the tents, but they dropped all around us. Went on for about half an hour. But this Federal National Army... We had to go and visit them every, I think, probably once a week or something. So you had to climb over the hill, which was quite high. I think probably 2,000 to 3,000 feet, I suppose, over the hill to find these people, just to let them know that we were still there and we still thought about them, sort of thing. So it gave them a bit of confidence.
How did you get on with them?
Well, the time that we saw them, they were all right. I mean, we only sort of stayed there with them for an hour and that sort of thing.
How competent were they?
Well, not very competent, I don't think. I don't think they were, anyway. Well, how competent they were, because the mortars that used to fire on us came from the same sort of area that they were in, so they weren't that competent, I didn't think, anyway.
You thought it was them?
I thought it was them, yeah. Yeah. But, we used to go there and sort of sit around with them. We had our own rations with us, so we sat around with them for an hour and then made our way back. But used to go there about once a week and just let them know we're still around.